The theater, the theater. Bring out Louis!
Theater, theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater, theater.
Hey friends.
Hey.
Hi friends.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, Scott feels good today. I love that.
I'm rested. I'm back to normal a little bit, doing regular workouts and oh, and this bag of cocaine. What now?
What? Oh, that helps.
No, not
how
true.
Dare you.
CJ, what about you? How are you feeling? You feeling rested?
I'm feeling tired just because my big show that I've been producing and playing one of the leads in is this weekend.
You got it coming up. This
house. So yeah.
Scott and I will be there Friday night.
I'm 3 days away from I'm taking all day Sunday and playing Tears of the Kingdom, actually.
You know what we're actually going to do? I've decided Friday night, Scott, and I'm going to make you come with me. And Siege, if you can make it too. Mm. We're going to go see There's Evil in This House. And then we're going to go to the live taping at 9:30 of Bonnie's A Terrible Show for Terrible People.
Where's that at? Mm. All right.
I don't know. I actually
the Lyric Hyperion?
Maybe.
I just saw it on Facebook.
Yeah.
Isn't the Lyric Hyperion at...
That's where she is in Scotland.
In Disneyland, isn't it?
No, I don't know. I just saw A Terrible Show for Terrible People pop up on Facebook, and it was at the Lyric Hyperion.
Anyway, I'm sleepy because I am running a Shakespeare camp right now, and it's kicking my arse.
Arse?
Yep, 7 to 14-year-olds.
Doing the Lord's work, though.
That's right.
7 to 14-year-olds.
Yeah, dude.
Ooh, that energy is crazy.
I have an 8-year-old
playing...
all over
the place.
Exactly. I have an 8-year-old playing Falstaff. an 8-year-old playing Poins and a 9-year-old playing Prince Hal, and it's one of the best scenes I've ever worked on in my life. It's fantastic.
Great.
Yeah. And then besides that, there's a lot of things going on in the theater world right now. What theater, film, entertainment world. A lot of striking.
Striking's happening. Well, WGA has been on strike. I think we're hitting week 8 or 9. I can't remember. And then as we speak, there's been a request for a mediator for the SAG-AFTRA negotiations, but I don't hold up a lot of hope. I think that the industry will be shut down by the end of this week.
Good.
That's my
Listen.
Prediction.
I think we should end all film and television anyway, and then people come back to the theater. So let's cancel it all.
Yeah,
y'all.
But then equity is going to go. Sure. Equity is going to go on strike in solidarity. Right. No.
Maybe not. You know, though, with the Writers Guild thing, though, did you hear what came out in the news? I want to say yesterday.
Yes.
Or today.
Yeah, it
about
was yesterday.
The quote
about
no, we're going to wait till Christmas when they all have to break because they have families, and that's what we're going to do. And they're just being blatant about it now.
Wow.
And it's like.
Yeah,
okay.
There was a lot of backpedaling today. That was an anonymous source, and
we were joking.
Locker room.
We don't want you to be homeless. It's like, it's pretty despicable. And when you look at the numbers there, and what the asks are from both the WGA and from SAG, it ain't crazy. And you know, it's about, you know, the court of public opinion, because unfortunately most people, when you talk about SAG and Hollywood, they think movie stars. They don't think about the average Joe on the street, the average Joe in the writer's room, or all of the industries that are affected around it, catering, driving, electricians, all of the other unions that will be put on hold as well. It's crazy.
It's terrible. And they've lost way more money than it would have taken them to just give the writers what they want.
Yeah.
So that's pretty fucked up. Everything's broken, and that's why we do theater here, because we have to at least do some kind of art.
Yes.
Making, art. Or everything will just die. According to the LA Times, theater is dead in LA. Do you agree? Yes or no?
When did LA Times fucking say that, the assholes?
Well, I mean, that's been their general consensus for the past few years.
Well, I mean, here they wouldn't know because they don't go to see any,
Well, they see the Playhouse. They see everything at the Pasadena Playhouse and
Oh, and I'm
everything at
sure
the Amundsen and nothing else.
right. And that's it. I mean, if you know, and I know he's got a lot of ground. I know it's not his fault that, you know,
No,
the
it's kind of
Times
his fault.
has stripped down
Get
the
some more
arts
staff.
section, but
Yeah.
he does. He needs more staff. And
Yeah.
but also, when you spend a lot of time publicizing your articles about tennis,
Yeah.
Charles McNulty,
Exactly.
please don't come at us and criticize LA theater because you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
True.
You're not talking to
Go
small
fuck
theaters.
yourself.
He's not going to see small theater. He's not going to talk to small theater. That's the big one.
And
He's
that's where all
not
the cool
talking.
shit is happening, in my humble opinion. But,
Absolutely,
No,
you know.
agreed, agreed.
Yeah.
But we love you, LA theater scene, and all the theater
Yes.
scenes. We love you all because we are Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds, made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
That's right. And theater here is not dead. And each week, we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. And this week was a Scott's pick. Scott, what'd you choose and why?
Well, at first, I chose The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover, which we
That's right,
announced
which
on our
was
last
what we announced on the episode,
episode.
yeah.
So, our
Sorry.
apologies because it's not available streaming. It was. But it gave us a
It
chance to
was.
go.
I feel like I've seen it on like three different streaming services in the past few years. So
No,
when
it
I
was
couldn't
with.
find it, I was like, what the
It's like within the
fick?
last 5 months that it
That's
happened.
crazy. Okay.
And for
Okay.
whatever reason, they took it down. But it gave us a
Because Helen
chance.
Mirren's about to die and they know it.
Oh, don't
What?
say such
No, you're
terrible
right. I'm
things.
sorry. Hold
Blasphemy.
Tweet, 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 tweet.
Blasphemy. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But it gave us a chance to go back and do Topsy Turvy, which we tried to
Oh.
watch a couple seasons back,
Yeah.
but
Yeah.
it wasn't available at the time, but now it's back. It's up on HBO Max, and it's a distinct movie about theater by a rather unique artist whose work we've talked about before, Mike Leigh, who is from the theater. He's still of the theater, and this is an homage to theater, an homage to a period in time and a group of people, and it was a lot of fun. This is probably my fourth or fifth watch of it, but I really enjoyed it. CJ and I got to watch it together. Bailey sadly couldn't make it, but
Well, I went and saw The Seagull instead, sadly. No, not sadly. It was great. It was a great production. I actually really enjoyed it. It was at South Pasadena Theater Workshop, and
Oh,
friend of
right
the
on.
pod, Keila Packett, was in it
What's he
as
playing in that?
Keila.
What?
and was incredible.
Oh my God, I gotta go see
Really
it. Is
incredible.
it
And then our
done?
friend Alessandra, no, it runs till August. And our friend Alessandra, who was in Gifted, Scott,
Yeah.
was Nina. And she was breathtaking, like
Oh,
absolutely
great.
incredible.
Oh, right
But they
on.
were both understudies, so that you won't get to see them again. I think they've already done their understudy performances.
Bullshit.
Yeah, but anyway, they're doing the Chekhov project, where it's, you know, kind of a in rep of Cherry Orchard and The Seagull every weekend. You can see either one every weekend, which is kind of fun. Anyway, yes, you guys got to watch it. Technically, this is part two of our Mike Leigh miniseries within Scott's picks. We covered Secrets and Lies a few months ago, or
Yeah.
about a year ago
No,
now, actually. It was
it
a
was
while
a little while
ago.
back, yeah.
What a good movie, Secrets and
Yeah.
Lies. Oh my
Yeah.
gosh. I think about that still sometimes. There's some like acting moments in that, which, yes, you're right, Scott, so theatrical. Very raw, very real, very natural, which is the Mike Leigh way, right?
Yeah,
And we'll get
yeah.
into how he translates that into a blockbuster 3-hour epic period piece.
Right.
But he does. In my opinion, he kind of does. He does
Yeah.
translate that sensibility. That sense and sensibility.
Oh, we're gonna have to ask you to step off the mic
I'm
for a
leaving
probationary
to
period of
leave the
time.
podcast.
Just 5 minutes. Just 5 minutes. You gotta
You're
sit in the
right.
corner.
You're
Time
right.
out. You
My
get your
dunce
time
cap.
out.
Yeah.
Time out.
Okay, before we get too deep into this thing, Topsy Turvy, the song from Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah, that's what I was
Yeah,
like. Yeah.
that's yeah, okay.
That's not where it's from.
Oh, okay. Sorry. CJ,
Yes.
you do something that I really love,
Yeah.
We
and
all really love it.
you
Yeah.
do it really well, and you do it, and we all enjoy it, and I think all of our listeners really enjoy it, and I think they really
They
enjoy
better.
the stinger that goes along with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't have too much of a breakdown, but
I'm gonna.
CJ's breakdown.
A Victorian monocle and pince-nez sprinkled romp encapsulating Gilbert and Sullivan's fraught professional career and relationship after the release of Princess Ida in 1884 through the writing and release of their reputation-saving hit The Mikado in 1885. We also follow the performers in their company at the Savoy Theatre in London. Think Shakespeare in Love, which was released the year before, but in Victorian London, complete with delightful production design, witty repartee, and occasional period-style titties.
Oh, we love period-style titties.
Period-style titties.
We love titties on this podcast, to be clear.
We do.
We do. All kinds.
Pro-titties.
Yeah. We're pro-titty.
Pro-titty.
We're pro-titty of all periods, too. All Victorian... Yes. Jacobian, Elizabethan. I don't care. I want them.
The Dark Ages.
Yes.
Listen.
Of course, the Dark Ages.
Middle
the
Earth.
Bronze Age? Middle Earth, yeah. Hobbit titties?
Hobbit titties.
Ring of Power will drop some titties at some point, I promise.
Oh, please.
I hope they don't.
They will.
No, we got Game of Thrones not for the that vibe. Bullshit.
That's what I'm saying. They're trying to compete with Game of Thrones, so they're going to give us Hobbit titties, and I'm
no,
in for
it's,
elf titties.
Elf titties.
Yeah. Galadriel
Listen,
titties.
Those are somewhere on the internet in porn. Lord of the Rings titties are somewhere. Yeah.
Lord of the G-strings. Yep, I'm watching that tonight. Okay.
You'll watch it for 5 minutes.
You're right. That's as long as I can go. I'll skip to the elf part. Okay, so where were we? What are we talking about?
We're talking about topsy-turvy.
That's right. Yeah, and that was correct, CJ. Yes.
Yeah, it fraught. Was a great breakdown.
The relationship was fraught. I love fraught. That word. I forget about that word, fraught.
Fraught.
It was fraught.
It's an interesting take because it's not a biopic in any way, which
right.
I think it could have easily have swerved into this. This picks up at a very specific point in their relationship, in their career, Gilbert and Sullivan. It's really about their comeback. The Mikado is their comeback album after a flop and
exactly.
after kind of tiring out and tiring of each other.
Right.
They needed the inspiration. So that's what's kind of cool about it is that we really only kind of get a glimpse of their relationship, which from what I read, just seemed to have been very professional, very gentlemanly, very Victorian. And they liked each other, but they didn't hang out. They didn't party a lot together. It was just a perfect relationship that, you know, one dude got introduced to the other dude and they got asked to do a thing and they did a thing and then it became a thing.
Yeah. And I like that we... Like you said, Scott, we're just getting this little window into a time, right? And two movies that have done that recently that aren't true biopics, but like are giving you sort of the entirety of the character in one time of their life, right?
Right.
Two that have done that recently that I love, and neither of them got good reviews. No one really likes either of these movies, and I don't understand why. Stan and Ollie.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of controversy about what's his name in a fat suit,
John C. Reilly.
Yeah,
yeah, but also, shut the fuck up. As a fat person, shut the fuck up. But John C. Reilly and what's his name from The Trip? Fucking from The Trip.
Yep.
Tropic Thunder from fucking Hamlet
Coogan?
2.
Steve Coogan. Steve Coogan.
God, why can't I remember? Hamlet 2. Didn't we cover that one time?
Yeah, we did. We did
Fuck
cover
yeah.
that.
That was movies about theaters, I think.
Is this the best podcast
that was my
ever?
Pick.
We are.
We covered Hamlet 2 and Showgirls, so
yeah.
I think so.
I think
we're the best podcast
and
ever.
Also and Henry 6 Part 1.
That's right. Oh, yeah, we did do that.
And Chekhov. And Carol Churchill. We cover a wide swath.
Sarah Kane, though. Sarah Kane. I was trying to think of a bad person we've covered, but we haven't really covered. You know, the worst maybe is like Sarah Rule, Oscar Wilde. There you go. Thank you.
Okay, I mean, well, Circus Valentine.
So good.
Bad play. Bad,
it's
bad
okay,
play.
She admits it in the front of the book.
No,
in the
she
forward.
Does. She's like, sorry, this is bad. Enjoy. No, but Stan and Ollie, which I really enjoyed, but got
it's
a lot
a good
of flack.
Flick. Yeah,
it is a good
it.
Flick. And it's kind of just about this one time and later in their career, right? And then the other one I really love is Being the Ricardos.
Oh, I
oh,
loved
yeah.
that one.
Oh,
yeah.
good. Okay.
Yeah.
We're all
yeah,
in agreement.
I really did. One of my favorite recent Nicole Kidman performances. I
Agreed.
Thought she was fucking great. And the whole cast was amazing. AMC
introduction.
Well, yeah, besides that, that's her Oscar winning.
That's what, yeah. So.
It's that, then being the Cardos, then the Hours. Yeah. I'm kidding. But, and then Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
And then Moulin Rouge.
Which we also covered.
Which we have also covered. But no, agreed. And I think that that's when, especially when you have information on stuff.
Right.
You know, the, and the more recent things are, I mean, Lucy had millions of books have been written about that exactly. show and about her and their relationship and all that.
So when people were like, well, why aren't I want to see her whole life. I want to see her problems with Desi. I want to see a perfect rendition of Lucy. I'm like, why?
No,
go watch Lucy.
Yeah.
This is a story about a time and a feeling and you know, a person we didn't really know, but that we all think we know.
Yeah.
And that to me is more exciting. And it's about a moment. They do the flashbacks, obviously.
Right.
But it's really just about that 2 week period.
Yeah.
When they're headed into potentially getting canceled. Right.
Mm-hmm. It's And well, and then the whole communist
and her whole communist thing. Yeah. Right. Which is blown up, I think, a little bit for the movie, but even so mm-hmm. Happened and is Aaron Sorkin, man. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think
some Sork.
Love me some Sork. And I think that that's what Mike Lee does so well, is he establishes these worlds and like you got to kind of catch the accents. The accents are all very dense and all the language is very dense. But then when you start to get these, you know, sniffs of all the whole. We're like CJ said it best while we were watching it. She's like, I can smell this movie. You can smell the BO.
Kind of like Amadeus. Yeah.
Yeah. You can smell the perfume, the tobacco, the grease paint, just all of it.
Just
like,
all BO and cigarette smoke.
It's just
exactly.
like, it's so like,
and patchouli then, for some reason. I can smell a lot of patchouli.
Sure.
Or like,
well, it's cause he goes
potpourri.
To he goes to pop. Potpourri.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's I think what struck me this time watching it was how much is unveiled very subtly, which is a very Mike Lee thing to do. Which you know, we should talk a little bit real quick about Mike Lee, who came to film through theater as a writer, as a director, and usually this was an exception for this film. Usually uses improv and like long periods of rehearsal and improvisation with actors. And then they kind of, the script and the scenes unfold from that. Yeah. And you see it a lot in Secrets and Lies where, you know, a lot of like deep drama between family members comes out and it's beautiful and funny and sad and all that. And here he kind of uses some of the same strategy in order to form these really quiet little intimate moments. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, the final scene between Jim Broadbent and Leslie Manville, not to jump too far ahead, with him sitting on the edge of the bed and that dialogue and how sad and subtle and heartbreaking it was in so many ways because of the politics of the time and gender roles at the time. And then clearly they were childless and that was a thing for them that they couldn't have a child or
sure.
I think it was a bigger thing for her.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Him.
And him trying to kind of maintain the stiff upper lip, you know, Victorian era gentleman. I'm not going to be affected by this. But a great performance by Broadbent. That dude fucking woof.
He must have been born with that mustache.
Oh my God.
This is only our second Broadbent that we've covered, right? He hasn't been in something else. I feel like
Moulin Rouge. Yeah.
That's it.
I'm sure we've talked about him playing roles in shows.
Right. He's come up many times. Yeah. Yes, that's true.
Harry Potter's and everything.
Right.
But he's a theater guy, right? Like he's
fucking Slughorn.
Probably.
Oh, yeah, he came up
as like an original cast member of something.
Oh, he is also in Brazil, which we covered.
That's right.
He's the maitre d' in Brazil.
Fuck, that's right.
Yeah, so this is number 3.
Fuck, yeah.
This is called Broadbent, the Broadbent and Calvert podcast.
That fucking rules. That makes me really happy.
Broadbent nerds.
And then at some point, because I don't think CJ's ever seen Time Bandits.
No.
Right. Oh, shit.
Nihilism. We need to watch Time Bandits. It's a fucking trip, but he plays a game show host in that. So by the early 80s, he's starting to make these little cameos that keep getting attention and keep getting attention, and he grows and grows and grows, you know.
Yeah.
He just keeps working.
Fucking A. There's some really... Okay, well, we'll get to performances in a second. I was going to start walking down. Okay, one thing we have to talk about, obviously, is the production design.
Oh my God.
Which...
It's amazing.
It's great. Yeah. Sorry, I thought stunning. I cut out for a second, so I was like, wait.
No. I was waiting for you to say it rules.
Rules! Yeah, that's where I was at. That's because for a Mike Lee film especially, which now I haven't seen a ton of Mike Lee stuff, but when I'm thinking of Secrets and Lies, which is very beige.
Very beige.
And very simple on purpose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyone's wearing like really light.
It's also the 90s
tones and stuff. And yeah, right.
Early
and
90s,
Early 90s. And then you get to this film, and it is a year after Shakespeare in Love. You have a lot of bigger things coming out on this level, epics like this in the 90s, right? So it's competing with that in a small way, but I guess I just wasn't expecting to be as blown away by some of the cinematography, some of the shots of, like, you know, him conducting, but you can see the whole audience behind him.
Yeah.
Shit like that. Like, I kept exclaiming
about the bustles that they put on those women.
Costumes.
Those were some impressive bustles.
And it feels, because it's letting itself be kind of dirty, like you said, it does feel more Victorian than I think a lot of movies do that just go for the, like, pretty.
Leggett called it lived in. I thought lived that was in a good way to put it.
Yeah.
I think that's great. And well, although Amadeus is stylized, it kind of does that too. It's just more stylized.
You can smell that movie too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we discussed that already.
You can smell the titties in that movie.
You can smell those titties.
And the wig powder. And the wig powder on the
titties. And the lesions.
Yes.
Many lesions.
Well, I mean, I was immediately in on this. I didn't realize it was about Gilbert and Sullivan. I knew nothing about this. I just sat down and watched it. And I mean, I am immediately down for any stuffy British thing, like, because I immediately was like, oh, this is almost Downton Abbey time. And so I just was fucking in.
just real quick to talk about the cinematography. Dick Pope was the cinematographer on it. Has been nominated for some Oscars. Dick Pope. but he's like kind of been with Mike Lee for forever. He also DP'd Secrets and Lies. And he did The Illusionist. He did Mr. Turner, which is
I love The Illusionist. I also love Mr. Turner.
And Vera Drake.
Timothy Spall.
Yeah. Great Timothy Spall.
Yeah, Vera Drake.
Dick, he's got a good Pope. Career. Dick Pope. Yeah.
I know that name. I definitely know that name from other shit. Yeah.
BSC, yeah, British Society of Cinematographers.
I thought something that they did well with the production design, but also with the writing, was I kept giggling during the movie because I just kept thinking, like, what a silly, fussy time the Victorian era was. They really brought, I don't know, it's probably because I'm a theater nerd, but love it.
I would argue this movie almost is more about that than about G&S, right? Than about Gilbert and Sullivan.
I could go along with that.
I think it's a love
letter.
They're
the vehicle.
Yes, it's a love letter to theater. It also represents a lot of change that's about to happen.
Right,
it's happening at the end of the Victorian age. We see the great scene with the early telephone.
Right.
Oh my God!
Trying to talk.
I was like, I need another telephone.
What?
Scene,
yes. Yes.
Oh my God!
That.
I loved it so much.
But also the Savoy Theater. That theater was the first theater in England to be electrified. It was the first electrically lit theater.
They kept their gas lights for a long time because
they
were worried it wasn't actually going to happen.
It's not going to stick around.
It was going to be a fad that went away.
Yeah, but then they, I think, later switched them out for bulbs. But there was that was sort of the joke was like, well, but don't get rid of the gas lights yet.
Right, exactly.
Just in case. But yeah, absolutely. And the entirety of those what you were talking about, Scott, and this is the lived-in piece of it, is sometimes when we're just in watching them eat together or watching them in a, you know, in a study together, having a small a conversation that doesn't feel really relevant to the plot
It's
or where we're
dropping
headed.
so much. It's dropping
Yes.
so much subtly,
Exactly.
and beautifully. You know, I think about the scene, between the two women in the dressing room, and the one's got the wound,
Right.
on her leg that won't heal, and she's just kind of gonna wrap it up and go on stage because that's all she can do. And then the other one, you know, is a single mother and an alcoholic, and
Right.
you know, and how she's very much sort of put in a horrible position because of the economics of the time too, the
Right.
economics of the theater, which is another thing that was really kind of cool, was to watch Doily Cart and the woman who was his partner working through all of this shit, like literally like talking through the ledgers, talking through how the economics of this play is going to work in order for us to make money. And I found that fascinating
Yeah.
and really
They
detailed.
discuss whether or not women should be using nicotine.
Should be smoking
Yeah, they're
Yes.
coming down on her for drinking and having a kid when one
Right.
of their main guys and then that other side guy were both shooting up heroin before they went on
Morphine.
stage.
Yeah, exactly.
Morphine,
Yeah.
yeah, absolutely.
Come on.
Yeah.
I guess that was one thing. I mean, I actually looked it up because you see in the beginning that is it Sullivan? Sullivan is in pain in bed and they give him morphine so he can get up there and conduct the orchestra.
Yep.
And I
Yeah.
looked that up. He suffered from kidney disease.
Right.
So that's what
Yeah.
that was
That's what
about.
he's sort of dying of almost at the beginning of this film. Yeah, exactly.
But
Yeah.
then they had the guy that kind of, he was the younger guy that played, he was the character actor that always played like the magician type guys that you see him shoot up before the performance, but
Right.
nothing ever comes of that. Like I was waiting for something to happen, but I guess that was just a
It
character
was.
thing that they were showing us.
I think that
Yeah.
one of the other interesting things is the level of society that they're at. Gilbert and Sullivan, who were both born upper middle class folks who kind of rose to upper class, and Sullivan's been knighted by the time we start this story because they mention it a few times throughout. But then all of those cast members and the levels of power within the theater company itself are all shooting for that level of success, that level of society, but aren't
Right.
really going to get it. They know
Right.
they're probably never going to get it.
Yeah.
And that's another kind of painful aspect of it as well, is like how much you were boxed in, how much society is, I mean, especially women, you can see that with Leslie Manville. Like she's clearly like just wanting to
She
burst
just
out of
wants to
that. She,
get
right.
laid. Well, she also
Right.
wants to get laid, you know.
Right.
Jim
Well,
Broadbent got to write his stories.
and we talk a lot of, we've covered a lot of things that we always sort of say, like our love letter to the theater or to opera or to performing arts in general. But I wanted to read this quote from Time magazine. Richard Schickel, the year that it came out, wrote, "One of the year's more beguiling surprises, a somewhat comic, somewhat desperate, very carefully detailed story given heartfelt heft in the way it depicts how rehearsing and putting on a comic opera, quote, takes over everyone's lives."
Yeah,
And I was
it's
like, yeah, exactly. And it's like why it takes over our lives is both is multifold, right? But it's like one is that we all want it to, right? We want this to be our life. We want to be creating. But also on the second hand, it's like it also like takes over every moment of your being and your thought and your sleep and your everything.
Absolutely.
And I think we all deal with that in different ways as
Well,
theater
it's
makers.
also putting together a world premiere and working
Sure,
with new
sure.
works and
And
having to
yeah, and
change
you're
things
working
and
blind, and yeah,
which the three of us do all the time.
all
We're always working in
the
new work, so we
time. Just
get,
did it for
yeah.
Fringe, and it's like, I don't know
Oof.
what's gonna happen tonight. Let's
Yeah.
see.
Yeah.
And
By the
which
way, I
the
saw the thing that won Best of Fringe.
Yeah.
Really good.
All right, word
Top of
up.
Fringe, really good. It
All
was a
right.
one-woman clown show. It was really,
All
really good.
right.
Very fringe. Anyway, sorry, go ahead, Scott. I want to
No.
make sure I said that.
That it leads to, well, there's two scenes in particular. There's the rehearsal scene that Broadbent is directing, which So this is something I learned in my little research, is that really Gilbert pushed the boundaries of theater and is given a lot of credit for pushing beyond melodrama, beyond the standard staging of comedy operas and that sort of thing, making it more dynamic, both in terms of physically presenting people on stage, but also in how they interacted. But that rehearsal scene where he's they're working and then the stage manager has to get up and fill in, like we've all been through that, and like
Serial
going,
killer's
a
rehearsal.
serial killer's rehearsal, going, it's like, oh, I thought the word was such and such, and he's like, it was, I've cut it just now. Oh, okay, so I got to relearn that. And you're watching all these guys calibrate these what ends up being a very simple moment on stage, but requires hours of rehearsal to get to. And then in the similar vein, when Sullivan is conducting the orchestra and the strings come in early, and he very gentlemanly admonishes them for coming in early. Oh, I misread. And then the tuba players got something to say about it. Then the drummer, the percussionist, is like, well, I'm following the tuba player. And like, just all these discussions that we've all been in the room for, that we've
A
all
million
had,
times.
and that he took, that Mike Leigh's been in a million of them too, and took that magic that we don't recognize at the time and place, that is magical, it is entertaining, is absolutely engaging. Which I think is another theme of this film, is creativity and reinventing oneself. Here are these two guys at the peak of their thing. One of them's like, I'm done with this. I'm gonna go write real operas and real orchestras. And the other one going, I've been repeating myself. I gotta do. Of course, it's his wife. It's Leslie Manville who forces him to go to the Japanese exhibition, which then leads to the Mikado. It's.
I wanted to shout out one more thing about the costumes.
Mm.
Lindy Hemming, who did the costumes for this, I just clicked on her. Which, by the way, that's an aptronym. You guys know what an aptronym is?
No.
A name that is apt for the person who wears it. So,
Oh,
Lindy
Hemming.
Hemming being a
Cute.
costumer, it's kind of cool.
Ah,
An aptronym.
an
Word of the day, aptronym. Now you know.
aptronym.
Uh,
It's
but
like our
she.
good friend Doug Chainsaw.
Right. Well, he's a lumberjack.
He's a lumberjack, so
And a murderer with
and also
chainsaw.
kills
He's
people, so it works.
Leatherface.
Yeah,
Right.
two levels. Aptronym.
She also designed the costumes for GoldenEye and the 2006 Casino Royale. So she's
Oh,
done two
nice.
Bond films.
Range, you
She
say?
did Range, yes. She also did Four Weddings and a Funeral, which I love.
Okay.
I love that's the Hugh Grant, Andy
Yeah.
McDowell
Oh,
movie.
yeah.
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 She also did the Tomb Raider movie, Lara Croft Tomb Raider, 2001,
That's fun.
one with Angelina. She did Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, maybe one of the best.
What?
No, we don't all agree with
No.
that. Chamber.
No, come on. You're being
I mean,
you're
the
being
costumes are
provocative.
great, but
Yeah.
I love that movie. Lara Croft Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life, the 2003 one.
Sure.
And then she did the Nolan Batman movies and
Oh, no
Wonder
shit.
Woman.
No
Holy shit,
shit.
fuck.
Oh,
So
right
she's
on.
kind of in the DC zone now. I hope she keeps on with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's great. And I mean, all those, and the costume scenes, the trying on shit. Oh my God. What's his name with the girdle? I've never performed without a girdle. It's fucking just amazing. Like, yeah. Should we walk
Okay,
through the cast? I don't
let's
mean
do
to
it.
jump you, but
No, let's do it.
yeah.
The first person I want to shout out is the man playing Lewis. Do you know who it is? It's Dexter Fletcher. Who's Dexter Fletcher?
I was trying to remember where I'd seen him.
Well, he directed a movie we all love recently, that we covered recently. That is one of
Oh.
CJ's favorite movies.
What? No,
He
wait.
also finished directing Bohemian Rhapsody when
Oh,
Bryan
Rocket
Singer died.
Man.
Yes, the director of
That's it.
Rocket
That's it.
Man is
That's
in
right.
this
That's
film
right.
as one of the dudes. Yeah,
That was the
he's
girdle
Lewis.
wearing guy, right?
That's
Okay.
him.
Yeah,
That's
he was
Dexter.
fucking
No,
delightful.
no. Yeah.
He's Sullivan's valet.
Who am
He's
I
his.
thinking of then? No,
No,
oh
you
yes, you're right.
get.
No, you're absolutely right.
No.
Thank you.
Siege. No. He's kind of a secondary guy, but he's
You're
got some
correct.
moments.
You're
Yeah.
correct. Sorry. Yes. Now that I'm looking at his picture, you're correct. Sorry. Sorry.
I okay, accept your apology.
But he does a good job.
I'm sorry for your
He's very funny. Yeah. Okay, who Timothy Spall.
Yes. He's God always damn, fucking dude. Great.
Goddamn. We gushed He's over him a legend. For Secrets yeah. Secrets and Lies.
We
and,
have to do Mr. Turner someday.
Yeah, we have to do it. He got ripped off that he didn't get just a nod for that. If he would have just gotten a nomination.
He got a Golden Globe nod.
Yeah, maybe he
Oscar.
Did, but not an Oscar nom. Yeah. And it is awesome. And also a Mike Lee, and we should absolutely watch that. That's a good
absolutely.
One to put on our list. But he's just awesome, and he's, you know, it's all the he's a diva, but he's you know fragile, and then the whole, you know, scene with the cutting of the song and then the cast standing up for him and mm-hmm. and his reaction to that is just make me cry.
Yeah
small pass
pass, hard pass.
I don't think there's any fails in this cast, to be honest.
I don't think so.
It was
either.
A barn
really
burner
to,
of a cast.
Yeah, no, but we should still step through.
But no, absolutely, we should. But
Ron Cook as Richard Doyle Cart.
Producer. Doyle Cart Theater.
The producer. Fucking, I figured we should.
Yeah, dude, check out that dude's IMDb.
Yeah.
He is like just a worker. He's like a worker bee actor. Yeah. Like, just getting put in everything. He's solid as a rock. His stillness is marvelous, and he gleans a lot of power from
he's
that.
He's on two episodes of Andor.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's what I recognized him from. He was in Empire of Light, which fell asleep during, so I don't remember.
Yeah, it was a mess. It was a mess. But yeah.
And then I think he played Franz Ferdinand in The Kingsman, which was the prequel to the Kingsman series.
Yes.
He's around. But yeah, he's also in Chernobyl. He's on The Witcher. He's in the Les Mis miniseries that came out in 2019.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm liking the new season of The Witcher, by the way.
Is this the prequel season?
No, that's already come and went. No, this is the third.
This is with Henry Cavill?
Yep.
Oh, then I'm going to watch it. He turned me on to blondes. I'm usually not into blondes, but I'm into Henry Cavill as a blonde.
He's white-haired in the show.
Whatever. He's got Targaryen hair. It's fine. Okay, sorry.
But no, it's good. It's a good time. Anyway.
He's in a bunch of shit. I mean, if you just scroll through his, you're just like, oh my God, oh, he's in that. Oh, he's in that. And he's been on every TV show you can ever imagine. He plays Napoleon in Quills, the Jeffrey Rush, Kate Winslet movie that I love. All
right.
Right.
He's in Chocolat. He's in 24-Hour Party People, which I adore.
I know who he is in Chocolat, too. He's the horny husband that
Correct.
Bangs his wife when he sees her cleaning the toilet.
Yeah. Correct. He's in one episode of Doctor Who in 2006.
Oh.
Does it say which episode?
It says one episode. I'm sure let's see.
Yeah.
Season 2, episode 7.
It's a tenant.
Which is The Idiot's Lantern. He plays Magpie. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
But then the other one I wanted to shout out is he did the National Theatre Live's King Lear, and he was the Fool, which is my favorite role in that show.
Ooh, absolutely.
So I bet he was incredible. Yeah. Anyway, Ron Cook, Stan a legend. Good job.
Stan a legend.
Perfect for the role. Well cast. Leslie Manville.
Harlots alum.
She's Harlots alum.
She was on Harlots, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's just, I mean, she's getting up there. What was the name of the movie she did last year? Mrs.
Maisel Goes to Paris or whatever. Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris.
What a fucking charming fucking movie and what a great performance. But she's just one of those people that just keeps, you know, keeps showing up and keeps fucking delivering. Like, you think about what she does in this and what she does in Harlots and then what she did in that scene in Secrets and Lies where she plays the adoption.
That's right.
The adoption person. And that monologue that she gives is so fucking great.
And she was the original Mrs. Coulter in the His Dark Materials 2-night theater event that they did at the National in London.
Oh, shit.
When Pullman wrote the play version. Yeah, she was the original Mrs. Coulter.
That's cool.
That was like in 2005.
Flittle in Maleficent. I don't know what that means, but that's what it says in her IMDb.
All right.
There was something else. Oh, I saw A movie I did not like that everyone else really loved. She's also on The Crown. She's Princess Margaret.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she's the second Margaret.
I didn't know that. Okay, yeah, cool. She's great. I haven't watched The Crown. I should watch The Crown. She is...
Yeah?
In Phantom Thread.
Oh, yeah. You and I have had a discussion about... Like. It's the one Paul Thomas Anderson that I kind of go, tip the hat and just walk away. I don't need it.
It's one of three PTAs that I would probably just delete from my memory if I could. I think it's bad. I think it's bad. I think I would delete that one. I would delete Inherent Vice, and I would delete, like, most of Magnolia.
Oh, no.
It's fine. It's fine. Yeah.
And I also saw, I know I keep bragging about this, I saw Leslie Manville in Neil LaBute's Some Girls on the West End in London in 2005.
Hey, Some Girls.
You bitch. Yeah. I bet Neil that was insane.
Neil LaBute, shit.
Yeah.
Neil LaBute. Take a LaBute. Garbage. Dingleberry fucker.
But Leslie
I hate that
Manville.
Guy.
No.
Oh, yeah, anyway, Leslie Manville. We stand a legend. She's great in this. She's sort of the only woman who gets any legitimate screen time in this movie who's not just like one of the chorus people or one of the performers.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
who has an arc? I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I go along with that.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, name someone else. Name them.
I'm not gonna. All right.
Okay. Wait, who else lower in the cast besides our top two people do you want to talk about?
I do want to give a shout out to Nayako Mori, who played Miss Sixpence, Please. Right. She also went on to do Torchwood, which is a Doctor Who spinoff show. Okay. But it's three good seasons, and she's really, really good in it. And she's worked quite a bit in the BBC on the BBC since then. But she could have easily... Shout out.
Yeah. I have a couple.
Oh, let's do it.
First, who I think might be my MVP for this movie, is fucking Andy Serkis as the choreographer.
John Dubon.
He is so fucking hilarious in this.
He's great.
I loved it. And it was a fun surprise. Like,
this definitely would have been the first thing any of us would have seen him in, too. If you saw it around this
time. Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, let me double check that. But I don't think he would have been...
I think just some, like, TV stuff and theater stuff. But, like, yeah, he... This is... And so he finishes this and then almost immediately gets Gollum and flies to New Zealand. So, like,
a year or two later, he would have. Well, yeah, a year later, because they shot that thing for 2 years, too.
Yeah, so,
yeah, the first, yeah, you're right. Tons of British TV, through
He's
the years.
He's so
95.
Fucking funny in this. Like, it, I just loved it. I loved
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he is really funny. Let's see.
Choreographers, ahead, right?
Next, do you want me to move on to next actor? I want to
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Shirley Henderson, who played the soprano, was the widowed mother with the drinking problem.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Oh,
she's
shit.
Also Moaning
yes.
Myrtle, but did
that's,
you
that's
know...
the other arc that you get, I guess. Yeah, go ahead.
Did you know that she is the voice of Babu Frick in Rise of Skywalker?
I did
Fuck
know that.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
That fucking rules.
and I won't hold it against her.
Oh, yeah. I know.
First of all, Babu Frick is the best part of that film. And if you moved him into another film, he'd be your favorite thing.
Well, he is in Mandalorian
Babu
season
rules.
Three.
No.
I mean, that little creature is.
No. Okay. Babu Frick is one of the best practical puppets they've made in the last 20 years.
Nope.
Don't at me.
I'm at you.
Babu Frick!
And then, last one. Dorothy Atkinson, who was the other...
Yes.
She is also a Harlots alum.
Right.
Ah.
She plays the super pent-up Christian lady that's in the streets protesting the Harlots.
Yeah, that's right.
And then you find out she was a Harlot herself.
She was a Harlot.
Those were my three Harlot. That I had to shout out that weren't like mains.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. There's a few other people in here that are kind of interesting, but yeah, agree. There's nothing. A lot of the people in this movie, their top credit is Topsy Turvy.
Yes. Yeah.
I could see that.
But there's so many great performances in here. Mike Leigh is so great at finding those kind of people. And then, to speak to the Mike Leigh thing again, he recorded, these are all real singers. Everyone who sings actually sings their parts.
Were they
Yeah.
singing live?
Yeah.
Sometimes it seemed like they were.
I think a
Sometimes
lot of
they
times they
definitely
were.
were.
Uh-huh.
There were moments I could see it have been being dubbed for the purpose of the th other things that were going on while
Right.
they were singing, but
Right.
maybe not. I don't know. I mean, it would be very bold and pretty rad to be
Before that
doing
was
it
like the
this
thing to
early,
do it in movies, yeah.
right? But I think so. It sounded like it, felt like it, and they're all
Right.
actually singing their voice, even if it is dubbed. So
You
that's
could
pretty
tell, you
cool.
could tell
Yeah,
for sure.
and he's, I guess he took a little bit of criticism for it, but I think that it's the right choice for if
Yeah, he did take criticism for it.
you had to go with actors who could sing as opposed to singers who could act here, especially like for his crew and his sensibility and how he works.
And it was kind of divided on that front, though. Like half the critics were like, don't like it, it's crap, do it better, and then the other half of the critics were like, no, that's what Mike Leigh does. We like that. Mike Leigh, keep doing
Yeah.
that. Like, it's the
Because nobody
raw.
was bad. There was nobody
No,
bad.
I
Were
thought it
they
was a really
yeah.
excellent cast.
opera power, no, not
Well, I
all of
thought a
them,
lot of
but
them could sing really fucking well, actually. Like,
Timothy Spall, he
well,
was
yeah.
great.
I've actually worked
The
on
Beatle
some
himself.
I've worked on some Gilbert and Sullivan myself, so I was sitting there trying to be picky and critical about it, and I thought everyone sang really well, personally.
No, it was good.
Yeah. And we,
Go ahead. I just wanted to ask, and we can save this if we're not done with the cast. I tried to look it up, but I just didn't have time. Was how is the Mikado viewed now? Is it done anymore? Like, I only knew Three Little Maids from School and then the ballad that she sings at the end. Those are the only things I know about that operetta.
No,
It's,
no one does it anymore in California in liberal places, but maybe
okay.
other places. I don't
No, I
know.
mean, I think that
I mean,
they.
obviously, white people shouldn't be in it.
No, but I think that
But it's also
they're.
written by a white guy. White
Right.
guys.
Yeah. So I think Asian Americans have done it, but is it done a lot? No, it's probably one of the ones that should be put to sleep.
Okay.
I think
I
so
mean,
too.
it's. It's all kind of stereotype
Well, the
and
whole thing is like, look at exotic Japan. So
Right.
exotic and different,
Yes.
and it's like, yeah, it's another culture. That's true. Let's talk about it, like adults, and they're like, no, let's
Right.
do the most basic two-dimensional version of it, and that's sort
Right.
of what the Mikado is.
Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, it. I don't think the inspiration was anything more than, oh, this is fantastical in the what I can do on stage with it, and
Well,
that sort of
the
thing.
movie purports that the entire inspiration came from that sword falling
From the
or
sword
whatever,
falling,
right? He's
yes.
like, oh, yes, samurai swords, Japan. That's what it'll be about. Okay, sure. Pretty
Exactly.
funny. No, but we have two more people we have to talk about.
Of
Alan
course.
Cordner as Arthur Sullivan, Jim Broadbent as William Schwenk Gilbert.
Yeah.
His middle name is Schwank.
Good middle name.
It's
Schwank.
fucking Stan a legend. Okay, let's start with Alan Sullivan.
He was
He,
lovely.
I mean, he hasn't done a lot of big stuff outside of that, beyond stage and TV, BBC stuff. But
I wondered if he
what
had a
a
headache from that monocle.
sure.
but that performance is spot on. It's so perfect. And I again we go back to the intro and the setup that the start of this movie, he's done with it. I want to try something different. I need to do something bigger. I need to do something grander. And so I thought he was, but he was a womanizer. He was a party dude. He was,
Sure.
he liked the nicer things.
He's
He
basically
liked the
Tony
nice ladies.
Stark of the opera world.
But does good work when he needs to do the good
Saves the world
work.
when he has to, and then puts on the fucking thing and
Sacrifice
snaps.
himself,
And yeah, you have to. I am Iron Man. I am Sullivan. Alan does a really great job of being the sort of heartbeat metronome of this movie, mm-hmm. right? So that Broadbent can come in and just Broadbent all over the place,
yes.
right? And you got to have that for yeah. for a movie like this. And he pulls his weight. And he's not forgettable. He's not. It's weird that I haven't seen him in more things. Actually,
yeah, he's so good. Like, yeah, I mean, in such a great face and.
He yeah. was in Tar. He was Sebastian Brix, who I don't know who that is, but he was either. In Tar.
All right.
Oh.
He's done a lot of voice acting,
top
right?
Top film of last year. A lot of voice acting. He's in like a bunch of weird, like Final Fantasy 14 and
right on.
Bravely Default 2 and Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Yeah, all so right. it's like a lot of shit like that, which is okay. cool. Dope.
Yeah.
The video game Call of Cthulhu.
All
right. Right. All right.
Sick. But besides that, I'm going through this and I'm like,
where you at, bro?
Where you been, bro? Yeah. Like, this is all in the last 5 years. Besides Tar, he's in, he's Tubal or Tubal or however you want to say it in the Merchant of Venice Al Pacino movie.
Mm.
So he's in that.
I saw that.
He's in Mr. Nobody, which is a movie. He's the doctor in Mr. Nobody, which is a movie I really love, but it has Jared Leto in every scene of the film. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But good film. And then Defiance, which is that Daniel Craig Nazi killing movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was okay. That's
kind of good, actually.
Yeah,
good. I remember it came out when I was working at Blockbuster, and I was like, what the fuck is this? But I had to watch everything that came out new. I was like, okay, and I watched it, and I was like glued to the television. I loved that movie.
Rules.
He was on an episode of The Blacklist. He was, I don't know, Alan. Where you been, man? We miss you. He's in the video game of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix as Severus Snape, Argus Filch, and Professor Basil Fronsack.
All right,
Sack.
CJ.
It's one of my favorite words.
Sack.
Silly word. That's why, like, football season, they keep talking about sacks.
Weirdly, though, in the Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets video game, he played Snape, Phileas Flitwick, and Lucius Malfoy.
All right.
Okay.
He's got vocal range. Also, he can play the fuck out of piano, too. Like,
yeah, he was legit playing.
He was. Yeah, guys, I don't. He's in Talk Radio. He's in the movie Talk Radio.
Well, we did watch that, so we've seen him before.
The voices of Vince and Morris in Talk Radio.
Oh, he's a call-in.
Two of the call-ins in Talk Radio, a film we covered like 3 seasons ago that I still love. That was the first time I had ever seen that movie. I really love that movie.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm scrolling through this because that was exciting. He was on an episode of Wings. Remember Wings?
Oh my god. Wow, deep cut.
Is that we about, love Wings. That's about an airport in Cape Cod, right?
You got it. Yep.
Here, let's click on it and find out.
Tell us
a young Englishman born into a blacksmith's family wants to be a flyer in one of the newfangled flying machines. He struggles to show a man of his class... He struggles to show a man of his class deserves a chance to be a pilot and fly a war machine in France, set in 1915 during World War I. It's a different Wings than the Wings I thought.
That's not our Wings.
I thought it was our Wings. It's fine. It's not. No. It's a bad English TV BBC show. Okay, anyway, Broadbent. Let's end with Broadbent. We've talked a lot of Broadbent on this podcast.
We have. We don't need to linger.
Epic mustache.
He's first of all, he was born with fucking eyes for cinema, like to be shot. Like those big fucking blue eyes just convey so much, and he can just deliver a line. He can just speak, and specifically at the end in that fucking scene setting with him and Manville sitting on the bed, you know, there's something inherently disappointing about success after the huge hit that was The Mikado. And, you know, like the stress of him, like not being able to be in the theater when the show's going on opening night, He can't watch it. He can't be there. Like, all those nerves, and he just conveys it all so well. He's just a fucking, he's a grandmaster, dude.
He really is. He's
a grandmaster. Absolutely.
He's also in Paddington 2.
Yeah. Which is awesome.
I gotta see it.
Paddington rules.
Paddington 2 is awesome. You will cry like awesome. A baby. You will it cry awesome. Like a baby.
Listen, as soon as the next 72 hours is done, I'm gonna start watching movies and hanging out with friends and do all kinds of fun shit. So that's on my list.
He's also in Gangs of New York, obviously. He's in The Iron Lady, which is a movie I don't like, even though she won the Oscar for that. It wasn't very good. It's fine.
Yeah, it's flat, and especially in comparison to Gillian Anderson in The Crown.
Yeah.
I thought it was so, so much better than Meryl's.
Margaret Thatcher naked on a cold day.
Margaret Thatcher naked on a cold day. Margaret Thatcher naked on a cold day. Speaking of that, speaking of Austin Powers.
Again.
I want to talk about the Oscars this year.
Okay.
Can we do that? You guys down for that?
Yeah.
Because this won 3 Oscars. It won, let me double check this, but I'm pretty sure it won
Costume, I believe.
Makeup, and one other thing. So let me look.
Smell.
So
this it was nominated for screenplay, but I don't believe it won.
I think it might. We'll see. Okay, yeah. But there was, this is the year of things such as, this is the year American Beauty wins Best Picture. This is Sam Mendes. This is,
I thought Gladiator won that year.
It won the year before.
Oh, right.
So this came out in 1990. Wait, hold on.
No.
American Beauty won in 90. No.
In 2000.
Mm.
In 2000.
Films released in 99 in 2000.
Yeah. Okay.
Gladiator came out in 2001 and 2001.
Got it.
Yes. So this is the year after Shakespeare in Love has won. Mm-hmm. Which is why I don't think this was even considered for Best Picture. Which, sure. I don't know that it could compete against these anyway. This is a pretty good year. This is The Sixth Sense, Cider House Rules, oh. Green Mile, The Insider, mm-hmm. which I love, and American
Great.
Beauty.
Yeah, my favorite Michael Mann movie.
I would
delete. And I think maybe my favorite Russell Crowe.
Maybe mine too, besides Les Mis. I'm kidding. That was a joke. That was a bad joke.
You son of a bitch.
I will say this. I would delete the Cider House Rules from that list for me and add Being John Malkovich this year.
For sure.
Because that's...
Yeah, Cider House Rules is a perfectly good film.
It's fine.
But it's not a great film. Being John Malkovich changed the game.
It did. And it's Spike Jonze, and that's a pretty cool year this year in terms of directors. You have Sam Mendes versus Hallström for Cider House Rules, and then Spike Jonze, Michael Mann, and M. Night Shyamalan with his first nom. Right. So that's maybe only nom? Has he ever been nominated?
I think that's his only one.
Best actor
He's
this
nominated
year?
For Signs.
Do you guys remember? Was he? Do you guys remember the best actor this year?
It would have been Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey. Do you remember who best actress was this year? Because this is actually kind of cool. This is the birth of Hillary. This is the birth of Swank. This is Boys Don't Cry.
Oh. Nice.
Brandon Tina. Yeah. Angelina Jolie, Girl Interrupted this year. Toni Collette gets a nom. Tom Cruise for Magnolia. Michael Caine wins for Cider House Rules. All this stuff. Now, best. I thought it was going to be in score. It's not in score. Let's see. Best art direction, it loses to a Tim Burton film. What would that be in
1999? Tim Burton flick.
Art direction.
Was it
Corpse Bride?
Nope.
Wow.
I don't know that they would ever give art direction to a animated or claymation.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
I don't know. Was it Willy Wonka?
That's too late. This is Sleepy Hollow.
No fucking shit.
That's
okay.
Right. The Christina Ricci, Johnny Depp, Christopher Walken.
Kind of boring.
I saw that in theaters.
Yeah, I don't like the movie. This is also the same year as Star Wars Episode One and The Matrix, obviously, and The Mummy, and all those things are up for Best Sound. Talented Mr. Ripley was also up for Best Art Direction. Anna and the King, another period piece. But then you have Best Makeup. Topsy Turvy wins, and it beats out One of my favorite movies of all time, Bicentennial Man. I love that movie. I love that movie.
One of your favorite movies of I would, all time.
Well, here's the deal. As someone who watches hundreds and hundreds of movies a year, right? It would make probably my top 100 list, and that's a big deal.
Okay.
Right?
Right on.
So that's a favorite movie of all time.
I don't think I've seen it since 2000.
The movie rules.
All right. Well, I'll rewatch it because of you. It's
a good fucking movie. Robbie Williams. And then Life also was out that year, which has all that old age makeup. It's Martin Lawrence and
Eddie
Murphy.
That is a fucking underrated movie.
That movie rules.
They are brilliant in that movie. Yeah. Oh, that's a fucking
really good one.
Funny film and sad. It's
And then to warp it back around to the reference that brought me here, what else was nominated for Best Makeup?
Oh, was it Spy Who Shagged Me?
The Spy Who Shagged Me, the sequel to Austin Powers. And then Best Costume Design, you basically have the same list as makeup, but one difference. So check this out. Topsy Turvy, Anna and the King. Topsy Turvy wins. Anna and the King, Sleepy Hollow, Talented Mr. Ripley. And then a movie we've talked about a few times on this podcast, starring Anthony Hopkins and Alan Cumming and Jessica Lange. And it's directed by...
Titus?
It is Titus. A good movie.
Cool, yeah.
Julie Taymor's best film, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
What a weird fucking movie.
Besides Across the Universe,
so
of course. Across the Universe.
Come
That's
on.
That's a two for me. I like Titus better.
Yeah. And then there was one more that it was up for. You're right, Scott. It was...
Screenplay?
Let's see.
What did it lose to?
Screenplay based on previous material?
It would have
This was original. Yeah, wow. Nominated for original. It's not based on anything except reality, I guess. The nominations were... The winner was American Beauty.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Alan Ball, which actually, makes sense. Alan Ball writes
time and,
weird,
time
but
and
I
place.
Like.
Yeah, time
exactly.
And place,
exactly.
Yeah.
Sure.
But also nominated that year, which should have won, in my opinion, being John Malkovich, one of the great screenplays.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kaufman.
Yeah.
And then you have PTA for Magnolia.
Nice.
M. Night Shyamalan for Sixth Sense. You have a lot of writer-directors this year, actually. That's
nice,
kind of cool.
Yeah.
M. Night Shyamalan for The Sixth Sense, and then Mike Lee for Topsy Turvy, who both wrote and directed the film as well.
Wow.
So those were its noms. Those were its wins. Haley Joel Osment's nominated this year. Michael Clark Duncan, Denzel Washington for The Hurricane. This is a cool year. It's a really good year.
A cool year.
You know
why?
Because 1999 is the best year for film. Okay, what else is there to say? There's not really much. I feel like we've...
No, again, thank you for indulging me in my pick.
It was fun.
And
it was fun.
Yeah, I had forgotten how much of an ode to theater it was, and I really enjoyed it. Spoke to me in those ways, but I just thought it was sublime. Sublime is the word I would use. Sublime.
Would you guys fuck Jim Broadbent?
Yeah.
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 Just on principle, yeah.
With the mustache, though, right?
He must have a
mustache. I was going to say, because without, I don't know. Slughorn? No. Ziegler? Yes.
Yeah, you
Ziegler,
want it,
whatever his name is.
You want it with a lot of...
Zika?
Well, never mind.
Wax.
Yeah,
wax.
I want the brushy...
The curly cues.
Curly cues around my crotch.
Curly cues around my crotch, also my butt.
Which also means my mouth, because mouths and butts are the same thing.
Yep.
Thank you for joining us. let's do some LA spotlights. Let's spotlight some LA theater. Drop that shit.
LA Spotlight.
CJ, do you have anything you want to shout out?
Well, I just wanted to shout out the aforementioned Cherry Orchard at the South Pasadena Theater Workshop. It's going with The Seagull, correct?
Yeah, so on Fridays and Sundays, you can see The Seagull. And on
Saturdays and Sundays
you can see The Cherry Orchard.
Yes.
But it's like most of the people are in both casts. It's kind of cool.
But it's going through the 6th of August. And you can find more information at South Pasadena Theater, RE, workshop.com.
Yeah.
Nice.
Because they're workshopping the art form of theater, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
They're not the South Pasadena Theater. They're the South Pasadena Theater Workshop.
Mm. Yes.
You guys, everyone understand now?
I get it.
RE is the art form. ER is the building.
We got it.
All right, Scott.
AMC.
I really don't.
Except we love your A-lists. Keep it up. Keep it up.
I don't really have anything. Bailey and I are going to see CJ in There Is Evil in This House this weekend. But by the time you've heard this episode, it's already come and gone. So
we're just going to say it was awesome.
It's going to be awesome. I'm very excited about it. But that's all I got. But some announcements may be coming soon. We'll see.
Good. Yeah, I don't have anything except in a few weeks. I'll shout this out next week because it'll be closer to time. But if you're in the LA area and you want to see some Shakespeare, my Shakespeare Youth Festival, we're doing a Ren run, a true Renaissance run outdoors where the kids have had the scripts for 6 weeks and they show up on Monday, 2 weeks from now, show up on Monday and they have to put up the entirety of Midsummer Night's Dream uncut by Friday. I'm also uncut. But by Friday, no, I'm not. I am uncut. I am cut.
Oh, okay. That's fine too. They're both fine.
But what was I talking about? Children's theater, right?
Children's theater.
Shit.
And circumcision.
Cut it all out.
So to speak.
No, well, it's all the same. If you want to come see it, it's my teen ensemble. It's a bunch of kids who are just super nerdy and passionate about Shakespeare. They did Henry VI last year, and it was incredible. And now they're doing, well, not last year, a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And now they're going to put up all of Midsummer in 1 week, and I do not direct them. They put it up themselves, much like Scott and Nedra for If I'm Good. They're going to just direct themselves, put it up, and make it happen, because apparently that makes good fucking theater. So that's the goal.
That's it.
That's all I got. I love you guys.
Love you.
Thank you
for joining us for Topsy Turvy, the Scott's pick. Join us again next week for CJ's pick.
Yeah, if y'all will let me, I have a little mini series that I want to do. It's a James McClure mini series, starting with, and they're just 2 one-act plays. One is called Lone Star, and then it has a sister play called Laundry and Bourbon. I haven't read them in 20 years, and I just want to see how I feel about them again.
So we're starting with Lone Star?
We're starting with Lone Star.
Got it.
Because I believe Laundry and Bourbon was written second. So
done and done. So get ready for that next week. Is it on anything? Is it on Scribd or anything like that? People can find it?
I'd have to look. I just know I have copies of them sitting on my bookshelf that I was going to share, but I'm sure we can find them.
Well, Google them and find a copy, read it so that you can join us for next week. And then after that is our Martin McDonagh miniseries. We haven't come up with a name for it yet. Do we want to do that now or later?
I don't know his stuff as well.
The Podcast Man?
Podcast Man's easy.
A very, very, very dark podcast.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I like that. Yeah.
The Lieutenant of Podcastmore?
Podcastmore. Lieutenant of Podcastmore.
Podcast of Inishirin?
Yeah.
Podcast of Inishirin is fun.
That's actually kind of funny. Three podcasts outside of Ebbing, Missouri. Fucking stupid. Okay, we'll find something. I don't know. We'll talk to you guys next week, but thanks for joining us. CJ.
Do y'all have questions, comments? You can reach out to us via email, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Scott?
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. Our theme song is better than your theme song.
Batch.
It's true.
He also writes all of our stingers. He's an amazing human being. We love him. We love you, Ryan. And then finally, to the great award-winning playwright Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. And one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer.
It's true. We're going to do it.
Yes.
Subscribe, rate, review. We love you all. See you next time. Peace out.
Peace.
Brush up your Shakespeare. Start quoting him now. Brush up your Shakespeare and the women you will wow. That's all I know of that song. It's from Kiss Me Kate.
Love it.
Kiss Me Kate. Later, everybody.
I want to kiss you both.
The theater. The theater.
Theater.